out there, world, and welcome to Curtain Call with Cosmo and Pauline. I'm your co-host, Cosmo Esplin, here with my other delightful co-host, Pauline Jennings. How are you doing, Pauline?
I'm doing good, and you're delightful too, I have to say.
Oh, well, thank you. How delightful. Yes, thank you.
It'll be a delightful show, I think.
Excellent. Yes, well, we're back, and we have a great show for you today. We'll introduce our guest a little bit later on, but it's a very exciting interview with some details that you'll want to be in the know on or about. So I have a few shows here, if I could please mention them.
Yes.
They're kind of wrapping up the seasons for the summer. So, of course, it's May, and that is what I believe is the summertime. I don't think that spring is here anymore. I think that spring is dead and summer is alive. So that might be optimistic, but
we didn't get spring, really.
That's true.
We had a couple days of spring and it went from like fall like weather to now today it's summer.
Yes, exactly. So. Yeah, that's how it works. And then I'll probably be winter again in about a week.
Exactly.
Right. So at Paradise Center for the Arts, I just want to say you're a good man, Charlie Brown. Oh, no, I wasn't talking to you, Pauline. I'm talking about Paradise Community Theater's next show. So 56 years after its theatrical debut, this adored family-friendly musical from Clark Gesner, I think that's how you pronounce his name, still captures audiences' hearts by kidnapping Charles M. Schulz's beloved characters, stuffing them in the back of a musical van, and delivering them onto the stage. A slightly disturbing metaphor, but effective nonetheless. Directed by Cody Jensen, with musical instruction by Shelley Fitzgerald, you're a good man, Charlie Brown, opens the weekend of May 12th, so in 1 week, and continues the following weekend, starting with a Thursday night show on the 18th. And the final show is ASL interpreted, by the way. Also occurring this month at Lakeville Area Arts Center, or LAC for short, is the Twin Cities Homeschoolers for the Arts, T'Cha for short, production their production of The Comedy of Errors. The play has been adapted into a fresh new version by the enthusiastic group. However, they will still stay true to the original work, which was apparently penned by a relatively unknown and rather wordy writer by the name of Bill Shakespeare. Is that how you pronounce it?
I think that's how it's...
Shakespeare?
It may be Shakespeare.
Yeah, something like that. I don't know. Very English. Anyway, The Comedy of Errors has only 3 showings, so mark your calendars for the weekend of May 19th.
Got it.
That's when it performs. Then just a few things I want to mention happening at the Guild here is they have Mom the Musical this month. Tonight is opening night. So, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later with our guests, provide some more details, but get your tickets if you want to. And then last month, the Guild held auditions for The Winter's Tale, directed by Susan Carlson and again written by the obscure Bill Shakespeare. This is the final show of the NAGS 63rd theater season and will perform in Central Park, not the New York one. They have made their casting verdict. Get it? Casting, because they're casting. Casting verdict. Uh-huh. Just want to make sure everybody understood that. They've cast for the most part. The play is a great ensemble so far, but they're still looking for about 4 or 5 roles to fill, I believe. So if interested, email carlsonmc@gmail.com. Coming soon to a park near you, summer 2023. There is one more thing I do want to mention quick. On May 15th and 16th, Lakeville Area Arts Center will hold auditions for the classic Pulitzer Prize-winning play, You Can't Take It With You. Simply put, this comedy revolves around a recently engaged couple's distinctly eccentric families. Now, I was previously unaware that the life of my family was adapted into a play, so that's a bombshell. But yeah, so there's some auditions happening still, so I just want people to know that because it's the end of the season coming up. So anyway, awesome. On to you.
You're on fire, comedically, I have to say. I'm not going to match that, so I'll do the dry delivery.
Excellent.
I don't know how many of you have heard out there, but the History Theater is doing a brand new musical written by the men that wrote Glenshean, which is, I think, performed in the last couple of years at the History Theater to great acclaim. And it's called, drum roll, The Defeat of Jesse James.
Wow.
I know. And here is the synopsis. 1876. It's the last gig for Jesse James, a one-night-only farewell concert starring America's most notorious desperado. Join Jesse as he reenacts his dramatic rise and fall in this mix of honky-tonk cabaret and Wild West show with a grand finale at a place called Northfield, Minnesota.
No way. Wow, we are officially a historical landmark.
That's right. So I'm excited to see it. Steve and I both want to get up there and see that. It runs April 29th through May 28th. And it's at the History Theater, as I said. And for more information, historytheater.com.
Maybe they'll perform it again in September. That would be even better.
Right. Exactly. I had the idea of calling them and say, hey, you want to put this on in Northfield? Both of those
Yeah.
Defeated Jesse James days. But who knows? I might. I just might. You
Ooh.
never know. All right. What
Nice.
else I have is a show called Lady Day. Actually, the whole title is Lady Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill. And this is at Yellow Tree Theater in Osseo. And that's a kind of a drive. But the reason I bring this one up is because it stars Thomasina Petrus, who covers those old jazz women singers perfectly. Here's the synopsis of this show. It's March 1959, somewhere around midnight, in a small seedy bar in South Philadelphia. Unbeknownst to the transfixed audience, they are about to witness one of Billie Holiday's last performances 4 months before her death.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the sultry music numbers, interwoven with salty, humorous, and heart-gripping reflections, paint a colorful portrait of the fascinating life and music of Lady Day. Awesome. This runs April 21st to May 21st, so you don't have a whole lot of time to see it. It's directed by the fabulous Austin Van, and like I said, stars Thomasina Petrus. Last is Old Log Theater, and the reason I'm bringing this up, this is called Million Dollar Quartet, and it opens June 2nd, 2023. And the reason I brought it up is because our very own, Northfield's very own Elijah Lear is one of the stars of the show.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yes. He's playing Jerry Lee Lewis. And here's the synopsis.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I know. It's going to be a great show. I definitely want to see this one.
Yeah.
This musical captures the memorable day when four rock and roll greats made music history. On December 4th, 1956, an auspicious twist of fate brought together Johnny Cash, Jerry Lee Lewis, Carl Perkins, and Elvis Presley at Sun Records storefront studio in Memphis, Tennessee. The man who made it happen was the father of rock and roll, Sam Phillips, who discovered them all. This was the only occasion the four legends to be played together, and it has come to be known as one of the greatest rock jam sessions of all time. So this play
Whoa.
captures that.
That's so cool. I definitely want to see that, especially if Elvis is in it. So,
Yes, Elvis is in it and Elijah Lear, both
Right. Yes,
great
both of
names.
them. Exactly.
Right, exactly. And also at Old Log Theater, for those of you that want to see a family show, is The Reluctant Dragon. And that starts June 14th and goes through August 11th. Tickets go on sale May 15th. And that's the synopsis for that is in this beloved classic story, a young boy befriends a poetry-loving, peaceful, friendly, and lonely dragon living in the hills above his home. The townspeople are afraid of dragons and send for the dragon slayer, Saint George. And
Oh
that's
my
all I'll say
goodness.
about that. That sounds like a good setup, doesn't
Yes, it does. Saint George, I just got shivers.
it? Nice. And
Yeah.
there, if you want more information, the website is oldlog, OldLog.com.
All
Easy
right.
enough. There you have it.
Awesome. Thank you for all the details, Pauline.
You're
Some
welcome.
great shows going on.
Maybe we should get a bus together to go to the Jesse James show.
Right, yeah,
Right.
exactly. Awesome. To see or not to see, that is the question.
It's the burning question, indeed.
Yes. Okay, I'm going to start with my 2C.
Okay.
Start positive. It's a film called Morbius.
I have seen it,
Okay.
but I can't
Now,
remember it.
you can't remember. Okay. So
That's not a good indicator that it's really
this
good, but go ahead, tell me about it.
is simply put a cinematic masterpiece. It should have won Best Picture, should have won Best Director, Best Actor. So here's how I can put it. The dark, dreary Morbius is a simply astounding display of cinema. It sinks its off-kilter teeth into the audience, sucks all their enjoyment out, and still leaves room for Matt Smith to do a weird dance. This movie is the worst.
Wait!
Twist. Yes, this is my not to see. Okay.
So you tricked us? This is really not a to see. This is really a not to see.
Yes, this is Bill Shakespearean trickery. The movie just has this dark tone, and I mean, I get not everything can be sunshine and unicorns and rainbows, but this movie is just so damp and dark and wet. Ugh. Well, let me set up the plot, okay? Because I'm going off on a rant. So Morbius is superhero movie, anti-hero movie, whatever you want to call it. It's based on Morbius, the living vampire, who's a Spider-Man villain from the comics. And so this is part of Sony's Spider-Man universe. They've done the Venom movies. They've produced the Spider-Man MCU movies, which are all really good. But this one is just awful. And so basically it's Jared Leto plays Morbius, Dr. Michael Morbius, who gets bit by a bat and turns into a vampire. I don't know. Apparently he's comics Dracula. I'm not sure. And there's some unsettling scenes here. The action is subpar. The visual effects are like vomit inducing. And the ending is just so abrupt too. Like literally, it feels like they skipped over the third act because they realized in post-production how awful of a movie this was. Let's just decide, well, let's just cut it right here. That makes most sense. No, it does not at all. And if you watch it, you'll know what I mean. Like I thought there was like 30 minutes left at least. Wow. And also the performance is not good. Jared Leto, he won worst actor at the Razzies. And what's ironic about this is that it was supposed to come out in like 2020, I believe. And of course it got postponed due to COVID and everything. And then Sony, for some reason, decides to drop it on April 1st, 2022, on April Fool's Day. I mean, could this be the greatest, the greatest practical joke ever? So wrap it up. Thanks to stunning performances, deft direction, outstanding writing, very well-lit lighting, and an overall sense of hopefulness, Morbius is the standout film of 2022, worthy of all the awards it's eligible for, which is probably zero.
Okay, nice. You bookended the trickery. You bookended
right,
it.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
Putting it at the beginning and end. People, don't be fooled. Don't see the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So it's awful. Wow. Okay, as long as you did your not to see first, I'm going to go ahead and do mine.
Okay.
It's brand new, and it's called Peter Pan and Wendy, and I watched it on the Disney Channel. It got 65% from Rotten Tomatoes. What did Morbius get?
You know? I think 17.
Yeah, that sounds like that, right?
Yeah.
And the word I would use to describe Peter Pan and Wendy is drab. Drab lighting, drab acting, drab storytelling. I guess I just can't say more, but I will. In general, the color scheme is like brown and white. And you think of Peter Pan and the magic and all that kind of stuff. It should be very, very colorful. There's no semblance of enthusiasm or life in the characters. The editing, I think it's part of the reason I disliked it so much. It just felt very like stilted, or like, it's hard to describe. When they would cut to Tinkerbell's face and a reaction, it was like she did the reaction in the studio later and they just cut it in. It just doesn't flow. There's no flow. Maybe that's the word to use.
Oh, sure.
The casting, I think, was just off. Jude Law as Hook is boring and not
really.
He didn't compel me at all. And Alexander Maloney is, I guess, fine as Peter Pan, but really he has no rambunctiousness. There's no playfulness to him. He did not convince me he was Peter Pan. There are way better versions of Peter Pan. And so I would not waste my time watching this unless you're a huge Peter Pan fan and you just want to see everything out there. I particularly like the 1991 version called Hook with Robin Williams, Dustin Hoffman, and Julia Roberts. So I would say do not see Peter Pan and Wendy unless you want to fall asleep to something.
I think that a lot of the Disney remakes just lack that spark, that magic about them. And so I just don't get excited about them as much anymore. Like The Little Mermaid is coming out later this month. I do kind of want to see that. It looks interesting. Like the visuals look really cool. But still, I'm kind of cynical about that.
You know, the remake of Beauty and the Beast was fabulous.
I like that.
With real people, live action, I guess. And there's one more that I'm thinking of that I can't.
Aladdin.
Aladdin. And I thought that was really good too.
Yeah, me
So they've
too.
done some great ones, and those were colorful and fun and just in the spirit of what those shows should be. So Cosmo, how about Tusi? What do you got for us?
All right. So this is kind of random, but it's still a great, fun movie. It's a Mad, 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 Mad World. Have you seen this, Pauline?
It sounds familiar, but it might have been a while, so I don't remember it.
Yes, it's a 1963 film, so I'm
Okay.
going back in time quite a bit. This is just a great, fun, old comedy that I've seen a bunch of times, and it's a long movie. The extended cut is 3 hours and 17 minutes.
Wow.
But the way that it is, it's a movie about a bunch of these strangers who find out that there's gold buried somewhere in California, I think it is. I'm not sure. Don't quote me on that. And they head off in search of it, and then they meet more characters along the way. And the way that the characters interact with each other and cross over is just brilliant. It's really great. I mean, everybody's just spot on with their comedic timing. And back when, this was 1963, remember, all these people, every single comedian in the country wanted to be in the movie because
Wow.
it had such a big, large cast. So it was like the Avengers Endgame of comedians at the time. You got a Milton Berle, Sid Caesar, Jonathan Winters, Mickey Rooney, Ethel Merman, Edie Adams,
Wow.
Dorothy Province, I think, just to name a couple. And it's stuffed full with cameos too, like people who I love, like Don Knotts or the Three Stooges too, just have small roles, but they still add a lot of their comedic flair into it. And then it's directed by Stanley Kramer, and Spencer Tracy, he's the police guy, I guess you could say, who's kind of observing everything that's happening. And so it's kind of told from his perspective in a way. I love Spencer Tracy, and anytime he and Stanley Kramer did a movie, they did four. I've seen three of them. It's just magic. So that's another great way to watch it. So to wrap it up, hilarious, pleasant, amusing, entertaining, and a bunch of other synonyms. It's a Mad, 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 Mad World is a fun, funny feature that makes for warm viewing and still holds up today, even if the actual world doesn't. That's what I
Very,
have
very
for you.
nice. I am going to go see that. I don't think I have
Oh,
seen it now that you
good.
say it was done in 1963. I don't think I have. What I have, I go back even further
Oh, wow.
to a movie called The Matchmaker. And this is based on a Thornton Wilder book. And it's also the play that Hello, Dolly! The musical was based on. Not exactly the same. There's some characters they added in Hello, Dolly! And some scenes they added, etc. But it's basically the same plot. And the 1958 comedy was directed by Joseph Anthony. The film stars Shirley Booth in her final film, Anthony Perkins, who's really delightful, Shirley MacLaine, who also is really delightful. It's a little dated. You know, you have to kind of put aside your woman must get married narrative disgust in check. But yet, I mean, it kind of pushes that, but it kind of doesn't, and has women, very strong women characters as well. So that's nice. It's well acted. The time comedic timing again is wonderful. It's like a little ditty. You watch it to be delighted, I guess. And they break the fourth wall all the time, so they talk directly to the audience in the movie, which I love. I kind of get like that. It's a little melodrama-ish. It's definitely worthy of watching. It's on Prime to rent. It's not the movie that you have to see, but I wanted to see it because, spoiler alert, The Matchmaker is going to be part of the 23-24 Guild season.
Right,
Snuck that
absolutely. It's funny that you say that Shirley MacLaine is in it, because she's in two other movie versions of plays that the Guild is doing this season. So maybe that's their theme this year. I don't know.
in. Right, exactly. I didn't even think of that. Nice point. So to wrap up, not to see.
Morbius, a spectacular and emotionally relevant film.
Not and
Correct.
Peter Pan and Wendy. Tusi is
It's a mad, 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 mad world.
and The Matchmaker, the 1958 film.
Excellent.
It's time to find out who our guest is.
Yes, that's right. We're skipping right over this. We haven't been faithful to CCPPP, couldn't call pesky pet peeves. But it seems like it just we get carried away with to see, not to see. So yes, it is time to introduce our guest. So drum roll, please. Our guest this month is Misha Edwards.
I've had the opportunity to get to know Misha a little bit better after she became the theater manager at, or the performing arts manager at the Guild, because I've produced some of the stuff for the Guild. So we've had a chance to interact and get to know each other better. And she's just a sweetheart.
Oh, wow, that's great.
And a great
Yes.
director.
Yes, absolutely. She's talented, she's kind, and as we talked about in the interview, I did get a chance to work with her on a show that was unfortunately cut short, but it was still a great experience to learn from her. And she is going to be leaving Northfield and the performing arts manager position at the end of May. And we're sad about that, but we're also happy for her. So we had a lot of great things to talk about, and including the Gillis next season. So.
That's right. Where she goes through the whole season, including the lab performances and the whole regular season and some special performances as well. So we're going to hear it all here coming up. So it's time to
Awesome.
introduce.
Our guest, Misha Edwards, to Curtain Call. Hello, Misha, and welcome to Curtain Call. It's so great to have you on here.
Thank you. I appreciate the invitation.
And we've been trying to do this for a couple months, and finally we got her here. Yay! And there's a
Awesome.
specific reason why.
Yes, exactly. The NDAs have expired, and
That's
we're
right.
able to talk about the upcoming Guild Theater season 2023 to 2024. First, though, we're going to talk to you, Misha, about you, Misha. So, first of all, what is your first theatrical memory, whether it be on stage, in the director's chair? When were you first introduced to the environment?
Oh, wow. That was such a long time ago. You know what? I think it was actually at church, like little
Oh.
skits and plays we would do in Sunday school. I was raised in a Southern Baptist church, which is its own kind of thing. We used to do little skits, the Sunday school classes, and it
Nice.
was fun. And then I would write little stories for my cousins and my brother and sister and I to do at family gatherings. So
I love that.
Awesome. Wow, that's great. From then, did that kind of grow your intrigue of theater, and when did you finally get into the theatrical realm?
Probably, here's the funny thing. I was super, super shy as a kid. I used to turn like bright red if anybody looked at me. Never spoke up in class. Biggest complaint from my teachers to my parents. And I still tend to go that way sometimes, although people may have trouble believing it. And I was in a play in high school. My high school didn't necessarily have a drama department, but my junior year, we started a drama club and our English teacher took over. And we were close to a college, actually the college I went to. So we had some drama students come and work with us a little bit.
Oh,
And I
nice.
played the mother of the lead character my junior year in high school. And it was a lot of fun. The apartment, I think, was the name of it, but it's not like there's a more famous apartment play. It
Right.
wasn't that one. So, and then I didn't do anything until I was in college. And I was a sociology social work major, and my GPA needed a little boost. So I took a theater class thinking it would be easy, right? Yeah, right. We all know better now. So I just laugh whenever somebody says, well, I could take a theater class. Yeah. I pushed a house in Oklahoma. That was my first experience as a young adult. And then I became a theater major and
Wow.
loved it
Wow.
and was actually stage managers where I started. I was the stage manager for my junior and senior year. Stage managed big musicals and then Brigadoon, shows like Fiddler on the Roof. And then I started into acting, enjoyed it to an extent, and then started an MFA program in acting to do, professional training. And I found out I hated it. I
Oh, wow.
hated it. But that's where I decided that directing, yes, love theater, directing's where I wanted to be. There was a friend of mine, an MFA and directing candidate, he cast me three times, but the last time he said, he was a senior, he said, if I had a chance to cast you again, I wouldn't do it because I would want you to be my assistant director. He said, you don't turn your brain off when you're on stage. You're thinking all the time about the next thing. He said, you think like a director. So it was my first reaction too was like Pauline's reaction. I was like, what?
Right.
But he followed it up and he was right. He was right. Because then I started assistant directing a little, left the MFA program. Best thing I ever did. It just was not for me. And went on to work professionally for a few years and then started an MA program at the University of Nebraska, Omaha, which they don't have the MA program anymore. But it was a pretty solid one when I was there and was thinking I'd get my PhD. And then by the time I got through the MA program, I was done. I enjoyed it. I don't regret it. I did not want to write another major paper again.
It was an MA in theater directing?
Theater. It's theater with a concentration in directing and education.
Got it. Okay.
Okay. Wow. Do you have a script there? Because that was all just so fluid and natural. It was, and it was captivating too. It's like a bedtime story.
But I find it interesting that you, from taking one class, this, your whole kind of career choices are opened up in front of you, I guess you'd say. That's really, really cool that you had this epiphany with the help of your friend about not being on stage, but being a director. And as you know, as a director, being in the moment is what you have to be a good actor. Mm-hmm. And if you're always, always thinking ahead, and then you're not in the moment, which and it's hard to do that. Definitely. That's true.
And that was interesting too, because Pauline and I were talking before the interview, neither of us really knows your theatrical past. So it was interesting to learn about your origin story. From there, you are obviously very involved with the Guild. So how did you get to where you are now, sitting at the top of the throne as the performing arts manager? How did you gain, consume all that power?
Wow. Pauline's laughing because she had emails from me showing that maybe I'm not the most, you know, in control, powerful person all the time. So
that's not why I was laughing. I was laughing because who the heck has power in that position? You know,
thank you.
Put us into the business world or the political world, but being a theater manager, there's just so little power.
It's just like House of Cards, you know, it's just right. Theater world.
Yeah, Pauline knows it, so, and knows it from the inside. This is probably no surprise, won't come as a surprise to anyone, but there's this woman you may have heard of named Rachel Hyder. I don't know if you've heard of her.
I'm not sure if I have. It kind of rings a distant bell.
Right. Todd, my husband, had started his first year of teaching at St. Olaf. And there was, I think it was Beauty and the Beast. Rachel could probably correct this if I'm wrong. There was some technical element or something that they asked Todd to help with or consult on. And then I suppose they were talking and she found out that I'm a director. And the first thing I ever did directing wise was in Minnesota, was at the Guild. And Rachel asked me if I was interested in directing Little Shop of Horrors. Now, I'm not a music person. Anybody who's worked with me knows that. I can tell if I like it or not, or if it sounds good or not, or what we need to work on, but that's my extent. I don't know music from the inside. And I've always relied heavily on my music directors with a musical. It's two directors. It's not a director and then the music director. Rachel asked me and I was like, yeah, sure. But I was terrified because I never had done a musical. She got everything set. She got us together. I had a terrific cast, Joe Jorgensen, Steve Lawler, Ann Etter. I could name more. I feel really bad that I named some and can't go through the whole list, but you would definitely recognize all the names for people who made that an amazing show and an amazing experience for me.
Wow.
Still don't consider myself a musical director and probably have retired from that, even though my last experience was fantastic. It was Bright Star at the Guild, but that's how it started. So,
Sorry, did you say that the year that was?
I didn't because I'm not sure I remember. It would have to have been 2006, 2007, something like that.
Okay.
We've been here since August of 2006. So we've been here a little while before it happened.
Yeah, from then on, you've gone on to direct many classic shows, plays, and musicals here at the Guild, most recently Bright Star, and then you directed The Revolutionists too, right?
I did. I
You did,
did.
okay, and that was recent as well. I do remember the one time that I did get to collaborate with you was on the musical Grey Gardens, which was unfortunately indefinitely shelved, let's say that, due to COVID.
Okay, as we know, Cosmo, it's a complicated show to put together. It doesn't seem like it is until you get in it. Where we were taking that show and where we were at the end of Act One when we had to break, that was one of the most ensemble experiences I've ever had. We had you, we had our stage management team was young. It was amazing because the level of professional that came from that team, the two of them, and Cosmo as assistant director, and then the teamwork that was happening with the actors. We were having people jump in and create things like dance and everything else. It felt so organic. That sounds like a pretentious word to use, but it did. And it was amazing. I mean, the loss of the show, sure. It happened to us all across the world, which is a
Yeah,
little mind-boggling.
it is.
The ensemble and the feel that we had, that to me was bigger than the loss of the show itself. And that's what I missed, were the people in that room who would show up night after night. And there was one particular song, I still don't know what I would have done with it, but I felt like we as a team were working toward it. And
Oh.
I owe a thank you to Cosmo for helping make that happen. I still miss that. Those
Oh,
people
thank you.
in that room creating things. And
Yeah,
I
it was.
probably got us off track. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh no, I was just gonna say 100%. That was really a team-based effort to try and put that together, and it was such a fascinating show too. And the songs were really catchy. I remember like the first 5 months of COVID, I still had one song stuck in my head. And I wanted to be a part of that because when I first got in theater, I heard your name a lot, and I was like, "Oh, I want to work with this person. I want to work with this person, and I want to work with you for sure." So that was interesting that I still was able to have that experience. So thank you for all the wisdom that you provided on that.
Thank you. Thank you. I
Yes.
appreciate you.
And so now you have paved the way to the top of the chain as performing arts manager after years of directing. So what's it like being performing arts manager and saying goodbye to this position coming soon?
That's really interesting because I started the school year this year as a teacher, and there were so many things going on in our lives. We did not know where we would be. Todd and I, my husband, we did not know where we would be like in September, like this next September. We knew that there were a lot of unknowns. And honestly, I'm going to be frank with you. I was under a lot of stress. And I started the school year, I felt strong, but I could feel it slipping a little bit. And I was very fortunate that I worked with a very supportive team at Cannon Valley Special Education Cooperative, longest name for a school ever, I think. But I was very fortunate, and including up to my supervisors and our executive director, always wanted what was best for us. And unfortunately, what I
Yes.
decided was best for me, and therefore it makes it best for the students, was to step back from that position. I miss it. I miss them all every day. But I felt like I was doing what was best, number one, for the students. So I had decided on that, on taking that path and stepping back from teaching in August. The opportunity for the performing arts manager interview didn't come until I think September. So I didn't step back from teaching for this job. It's just the way the timing worked. And honestly, I thought I didn't feel like the best candidate for the job. So I was surprised when I got offered the job. And looking back, it's an amazing opportunity. One of the reasons that I stepped back from teaching was to give myself some time and us figure out our lives. Todd and I figured out in December the path we were going to take, which was him leaving his teaching position at St. Olaf and branching out into other things. So we knew when he pulled himself out from the candidacy for his job that he had, we knew that we were going to be moving wherever that would be. It was a very weird year. I think there were so many things going on that Probably I wasn't the best fit this year for this job, but I know that great fit is out there and somebody who can think creatively at the same time as they can think administratively with a clear brain who isn't going through major life changes.
Right.
That person's there. We all know it's going to happen. I think this time next year, what I'm going to look forward to is getting on Facebook and hearing all these great things that have happened. So I don't know if you've ever found yourself in a great opportunity, but maybe not the best fit. You're not the best fit at that moment in time. That was me this year. And it was all based on just the uncertainty in life. However, it has been fantastic. I've never worked with Pauline before. I'm not sure we've ever had a conversation until this year.
Right.
And I've had a chance to. And it's been amazing. It's just been amazing. Cosmo, we hadn't been in contact since Grey Gardens, I don't think. And the people here are fantastic. The Guild is an artistic home for me now. The side of it I'm in, the top of the chain or whatever you called it, Cosmo, there's a thing to getting in something and recognizing that you may not be the best fit or certainly not at that point in your life. But Andrea's been supportive. My coworkers are amazing. If you haven't been able to meet Shelby, the new visual arts manager, we started on the same day, meet Shelby. She's amazing. Everybody's still been as supportive as they always have been, people involved in the Guild. And I look forward to seeing and getting to know, whether it's Facebook or whatever, the next person in this position. I believe that everything is set up in a way now that we're moving past some things with COVID and reorganizing and restructuring, that the Guild in particular, the performing arts manager, and specifically the theater, because that is where my heart is, are going to just take off.
And that's exciting.
That's a great optimistic view of things. And well, I just want to say thank you for your service in all of the theater realm and in Northfield over all these years. And you've contributed a great amount to everybody's understanding of it and being able to bring people in like me. And so I think we're all just very appreciative of that. And best of luck with your future ventures. So
exactly. And also, I wish I would have gotten to work with you as a director. And now that you're leaving, I'm not going to get that chance. And I wish I would have been able to get that chance, but it didn't happen. And you will be missed, definitely,
yes,
by many, many, many people in this community.
Thank you very much. And I would love to have worked with you too. Who knows if somebody has a spare bedroom or a couch and I've got free time, I would love to come back for, you know, what would that be? 4 to 6 weeks. Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. I'm going to hand you over to Pauline in just a sec. But first, we want to talk, of course, about some of the happenings that the Guild has coming up. And they're kicking this month off with a brand new show in their theater season, Mom the Musical, which is opening night tonight. So go get your tickets, ladies and gentlemen. And so, Misha, tell us a little bit about this show and what's appealing about it. I mean, it's just in time for Mother's Day.
Right.
That's what we're hoping is people will bring their moms out. People will bring their friends, family. I don't have kids, but I love this show. I think it's a really honest look at motherhood, but also at womanhood. It's a very honest look. It's also funny.
Right.
We have put a caution out there about kids. We would say we've labeled it PG just because of some language. And it's not, if anyone saw The Revolutionist in the fall, it's not revolutionist level language, but it's very honest. The reason we're doing Mom, if I could speak to that for a moment, Sweet Charity was on the schedule, but this has been a real transition year for the Guild. There were some things, we've been looking for directors ever since I started the job, and we were having trouble finding one for Sweet Charity because of the timing of it. And if you are looking for directors, you really need to start well before the season starts. So we were having trouble bringing together a team for that. Sweet Charity is a larger musical, and we'll talk about it in a minute, right? Because it's coming back.
Yeah.
It's a larger musical, and it was becoming really difficult to find the people we need. And Pauline has been helpful, very helpful on that journey with us.
Well, thank you.
This is a show I saw a few years ago. I have an English teacher I used to have in my brain. She would describe things as delightful. It's just a delightful little musical with four actors. You don't need a large orchestra. You don't need a Sweet Charity sized band
right.
or orchestra. So it became a necessary choice to find something small to replace Sweet Charity. We could have done a play. I mean, I'm a play person, love them, but we did slot this as a musical slot. And we do have, as we know, amazing musicians, singers. So that would be kind of taking away a chance for some people to just focus on presenting their art with their singing. It celebrates everything. It just talks about real life situations, but also very funny. And our team of four women, led by Alyssa Jorgensen, who is, in my opinion, the perfect director for this show. They are so strong. They sound so good together. The few rehearsals I've been able to sit in on and just a little bit I've been able to be around them together, they're such a strong team. And it seems like they all help each other bring out the best as performers in one another.
I interviewed Taylor Westland, who is the musical director for Mom the Musical, on Musician Talk, and the way she talked about it was so glowing, and about the ensemble nature of the work that they're doing, a la your Grey Gardens experience, that the ensemble experience has been so incredible. They've done a lot of talking because of the subject matter, delving into the emotions and the thoughts and all these things, these experiences that we've had as women and as mothers. So it just sounds delightful. And also Lori Page, who's in the show, auditioned for me for Castastrophe 4. And I'm telling you, folks, I don't know anybody else's voice in the show, but you can go and get tickets just to hear her sing. She is fabulous.
Wow.
I totally agree.
That's a sell. Yeah. Awesome. Well, again, you can get your tickets on northfieldartsfield.org. Go down to the office, call the office, you know. And then, of course, the other show coming later in the season, we don't really have to talk about it a lot, though, is The Winter's Tale. And so that, of course, is the season finale. All right, Misha, well, thank you for answering all my questions. And at this time, this is normally when I would say prepare for the worst when I transition you over to Pauline, because we'd have a recurring segment where she grills you about very embarrassing questions. But that we're not doing it this time because we're nice people. And Pauline wants to ask you about what the guild has coming up for this next season. So Pauline, take it away.
Okay, first of all, no, that is so not true. I'm nice to everybody and I don't grill them. I just nicely ask them questions.
That will be on radio for eternity. So
that's right. That is right. Okay, so thank you, Cosmo. Misha, I am so excited to talk about the 23-24 season, which was recently announced, and we wanted to have you on to talk about it. And so I would just like you to go through the shows or go through the season, and then we'll go back and kind of just talk a little tiny bit about each show.
Okay, great. All right. So we have chosen to focus on some comedies, except for one. We'll talk about that later. But next season, I wish I were going to be here for it. We start off in September with this amazing musical compilation review.
Review, yeah.
Pauline wants to, yeah, review called Castastrophe 4, the movie musical edition. And it is going to be fantastic, as we know. And then guess what? It's back. We have Sweet Charity in November, and we were so happy to be able to work that out and bring that back and promise people that it is not going away this year. And then we have the Purple Door Youth Theater. They're doing The Hobbit. It's going to be fantastic.
Very cool.
And one of my favorites, and I do want to make this clear, it's not the musical Hello, Dolly, but it is The Matchmaker by Thornton Wilder, the play the musical is based on. And I absolutely love this show. This was one of my finer acting moments. I got to play Minnie Faye. Yay. It's funny. It's fun. It has really good roles for people of all ages. And that, to me, is a perfect play. And then we have The Children's Hour by Lillian Hellman. That one's a hard hitter. We chose it because it has a lot of good messages in it. We're going to tie it with Pride Month. We talked about focusing on it, being sure that there's community support around the shows, like talkbacks. It deals with how unacceptable being gay was. There's a good reason we're doing this one, but we want people also to be prepared, and we want to protect our audience and our actors, because it's a tough one. And then we close out next year with The Merry Wives of Windsor. Again, one of my favorite Shakespeare's. It's fun, and it has roles for older women. Yay!
Yay.
It's just, you know, it's got all levels of emotions, but it is a comedy.
Yeah.
And I really think it's a perfect show in the park. I got to direct that. It was like 12, 13, 14, I don't know how many years ago, here at the Guild. And it felt like a good time to bring it back. So, yeah,
Awesome.
I'm
Awesome.
really, really proud
Wow.
and happy of this season. So.
So Sweet Charity is by Neil Simon, and of course, I mean that Sweet Charity is very popular, but he's best known for The Odd Couple, I suppose.
I love Neil Simon shows.
Yes, so you got the comedy from him. And when this was first produced in 1966, Bob Fosse was the choreographer. Can you imagine?
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And he got a Tony Award for it,
Wow.
amazingly. What's the storyline for Sweet Charity?
Sweet Charity is about a young woman who is very, very hopeful and very optimistic about her situation in life, even though it's not maybe the best in a lot of people's eyes. She is struggling in a big city, and she is, you know, however you want to call it, a taxi dancer, a dancer in a private club. But her view on life is that there's always something better and everything will get better. So she's not unhappy, but looking at it from the outside, the audience may go, why is she so happy? But focusing on hope for the future, optimistic viewpoint, working to do better for yourself. So that's more theme, but I think it's a good time to bring it back. Plus, the music is just fun. And fortunately, we have a lot of really talented choreographers in town. Well, I can tell you Mark Robinson's directing that, and
Awesome.
he
Awesome.
loves this show. But as far as a lot of information on the rest of the teams, things are still being solidified and
Sure,
firmed up.
sure.
So,
Well, I'm so glad Mark's directing again
yes.
this season. He's just fabulous. He's fabulous.
And I don't think I've seen him direct a musical either, so that'll be really interesting.
Strong show with a lot of people interested in it, and time to plan a big musical. We have the time, and Mark is off and running with it. So this is going to be ready to go.
So The Hobbit. Now we all think of The Hobbit as the pretty dense book. In the movies, there was three of them, I believe, to tell the whole story. So you think of all that magic and all that you see on the big screen. Tell us about the staged show. How is this translated to the stage with when there's so much fantasy involved in the show?
Well, fortunately, it's in the hands of Rachel Heiner. So,
Exactly.
yay.
Yay.
This is where I'm going to confess, and I think I'm going to turn Northfield against me or most of it before I move. I've never read The Hobbit. I've never seen the movies.
Oh my goodness.
This
Oh.
is the wrong crew to say that
I
to.
know. I'm sorry, I haven't read it either,
Okay.
and
Oh,
I
okay.
watched like 1 hour of the first Lord of the Rings movie and I never went back to it. So I need to get into Tolkien though, I know.
Okay,
And
that's a conversation for another day,
Okay.
Cosmo.
Okay.
I'm not anti-Hobbit. There's no reason. It just,
Right.
you know, it was just one of those things. I have friends who've never seen Star Wars, and I pretty much react the same way.
Here
Okay
goes
then.
Cosmo now.
Yep, not okay with that.
So as far as staging it, you know, Rachel has a real gift, as we know, for putting like a lot of people, a lot of young people on stage, and it works. This is an adaptation by Patricia Gray, and of course it's not going to be 4 hours long. That is really a conversation I'm going to have to listen to it after you have Rachel on, because
Absolutely. Okay, The Matchmaker, you talked a little bit about that. I found it interesting that Ruth Gordon was the lead, Dolly Levi, in 1955 on Broadway, and she got a Tony for it.
Oh, wow.
I love this. This is my bucket list role, but as a musical. And so
Sure.
I love this story. Love it.
Let me reassure you that you don't lose any of Dolly because it's not a musical. So think about that, Pauline. Don't know when auditions are going to be, but you know, they'll be advertised.
All right, moving on. The Children's Hour, you've talked a bit about that. And Children's Hour is written by Lillian Hellman, who wrote a lot of plays, I guess, in the 30s. Yeah, 30s and 40s, when women weren't doing a lot of that and weren't accepted to do a lot of that. And she had success. And she writes about some heavy, heavy, but so important issues. So I'm so glad that you're doing that. And then, of course, Merry Wives of Windsor, which is set in the 15th century, but a lot of directors have set it in different times. The one I saw in England was set in the 50s, and it was absolutely
Really?
hilarious. Hilarious. And there are a couple things that I want to just touch on, part of the Lab Theater special performances. And one is an original by Russ Boyington and called Evening of Fear 2. Of course, there are ghosts, and that's in October. And then we have Bringing Back Mrs. Moxie, Lexi D, and special guests for a Christmas show. And then Shakespeare's Will, and that's a one-woman show.
It is, yes.
Done by Susan Dunhopton, and she's such a fabulous actress. Amazing.
Like I said, the Meryl Streep of Northfield.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have the season now. We talked about the season. Is there anything else you want to say about the 23-24 season?
Yeah, there's more information and will be on the website as directors get solidified. And I know that people want to know, of course, who's directing as they're right. looking at auditions. That will be out there very soon. And like as in the next few days is the goal. All the information on that. And yeah, we chose a season. I accidentally ended up with a season of classics. So if we were going to title it anything, I'd say classics. And then you're going back to movie musicals, which can encapsulate so many things.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. we tried to find, with the exception of Children's Hour, which was a deliberate choice, we tried to find things that were on the lighter side because we think we all need that.
Yeah.
We really do. I mean, Sweet Charity has some darker themes too, but overall, we need some relief.
Right. Laughter. We all need the laughter. It's just so good for us.
You know, there was somebody who said to me, and I've never heard this anywhere else. It was an old friend said something to me like, laughter is the best medicine. Never heard that phrase anywhere else, but I just think it's so potent.
It is. It's a potent medicine.
Yeah.
That's right. We have the regular season. We have the lab season. What are some of the other special things that are going on at the Guild?
CVRO, the Cannon Valley Regional Orchestra, which is an amazing group of people, super talent. They have two concerts coming up in June, June 2nd at Oddfellows Park in Northfield at 7:30, and June 3rd at the Central Park Band Shell in Red Wing at 3 p.m. And there is more information on the website, on the Northfield Arts Guild website.
And it's northfieldartsguild.org.
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome. Oh, Cosmo, I will hand it back to you and for the final words here.
Yes, thank you. Final words with Cosmo. Yes, so thank you for being our guest today, Misha. Thank you for everything the Guild has done, everything you have done. I'm wondering, I'm going to put you on the spot. It's okay if you can't come up with anything. Is there a particular quote that you would like to leave us off with today, perhaps theatrically pertaining in some way? Anything that's maybe just even been on your mind the past few days?
Yeah, well, I have one that I think a lot of people use and enjoy, and oh my gosh, I feel like I'm going to mess it up now, and I can't remember the whole quote, and I hope to goodness I get the right playwright. Samuel Beckett talks about failing. I'm not going to try to quote it exactly. Basically, the premise is you failed. It's okay. Try again. Fail better the next time than you did the first time. I would like to say, the last thing I'd like to say is I'm very grateful to both of you. Minnesota's home, and I will miss it every day for the rest of my life. So thank you.
Thank you.
And Minnesota and everybody in this community will miss you too. Thank you for all your contributions.
Thank you.
Very, very much. Yes.
Good to see you, Misha. Thanks.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, what a great interview. I mean, she dove into some stuff. I mean, these interviews aren't very long, but we got to hear a lot of information from Misha and some insight into what she's doing, what she has done, and what she's going to be doing with her life moving forward, which is just really exciting, I think, for her. It's a new adventure.
Absolutely. Right, exactly. And yes, she's a wise soul, let's put it that way. And yes, it was a delightful interview. I think that delightful is the word of the month on Curtain Call. We've used it quite a few times. So thank you to our special guest, Misha Edwards, and to Jeff Johnson and KYMN for airing this show. I believe it's episode 22.
Yes, and please, people, get your ticket to Mom the Musical. It opens tonight.
Colleen, I hope that you have a great start to your summer. And I guess we'll see each other next month.
That's right. And Cosmo, I hope you have a delightful day.
Oh, thank you. You as well, Pauline. And thank you for being my awesome co-host.
Thank you for being my awesome co-host. And remember,
all the world's a stage, and all the men and women merely players.